in progress.
I would like to call the August 21st meeting of the Candia Planning Board to order, and please rise and pledge allegiance to the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay. Roll call. Judy.
Here.
Rudy.
Here.
Tim, here. Brian.
Here.
Scott.
Here.
Kevin.
Here.
Mark, not here. And Linda.
Here.
Linda, why don't you come on up and take the empty seat here.
Chair.
Okay, the just not used to seeing you standing there.
I'm sorry.
First business item is old business, case number 24-005, minor subdivision, applicant 34 Lane Road LLC, address 63 Lane Road, Candia, New Hampshire. Owner, 34 Lane Road, LLC, 63 Lane Road, Candia, New Hampshire. Property is located on Lane Road in Candia, New Hampshire. Map 414, lot 4146. Intent to create one residential lot by subdividing an existing lot. Come on up, Jason. We kind of changed things around.
It did. I didn't come prepared with the easel. I was expecting a table here, but that's okay.
We can go through it again. But the way we left it after the first hearing was we went through the checklist, and there were two items deficient.
Correct.
So you can do a quick chat, and then we'll address those two deficiencies.
Okay.
And then we can see if we can vote it complete, and then open the public hearing.
Okay. We're doing a single lot subdivision. We did receive state subdivision approval approximately 2 weeks ago on this lot. We had the wetland flag delineated by Jack Hayes. It's pretty simple, straightforward. We meet all the requirements for the town and the state. Test pit was done over in this area here in the 4K area. Proposed well over here. The radius intersect with the wetland that's over there. Proposed access is going to be up here, up on the northwest corner, coming in across. No wetland permit or crossing would be necessary to access into the building area. It's pretty straightforward. I can answer any questions.
And at present, there is no building proposed for this lot. This is just dividing off an additional building lot.
Correct. In the future, there would, there obviously is going to be a house on here, but currently there is not.
Okay. So let's go through the two items that were missing.
One was the locust on the plan, which I've added, shows the proximity of the lot, the roads in question. And the other one was the current use letter, which Amy has received, and I can do the copy I did bring on this evening.
Okay.
I thought it was current use.
So, I believe everybody was here for that meeting. And you were not, Rudy, but we did go through the entire checklist.
Yeah,
and those were two deficiencies.
I read the minutes. Yeah.
Okay. Unless anybody's got any questions or concerns, we can do a motion to accept it as complete.
I'll make a motion. Accept the applicant as complete.
I'll second that.
Okay. Let's go down. Judy.
Yes.
Rudy.
Yes.
Tim. Yes. Brian.
Yes.
Scott.
Yes.
Kevin.
Yes.
Linda.
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to move Linda between Judy and Rudy. okay. So it is now accepted as complete, and it is 7:36 p.m. and 6:36 p.m. Excuse me, and we will now open the hearing to the public. If there's any public comment, Anybody online? I will take that as a resounding no.
Tim, I have a question.
Yeah.
I'm good.
Jason, when you were talking about the access to where the upland land would actually be built, am I correct in saying that it was going to probably be just down from where the proposed septic area is on the map?
It's good. The access for the driveway is going to come in up here.
Yeah.
And then kind of wind its way down. However, we haven't really gotten to that part of the process yet, but this is probably the best spot for access. We can avoid all the wetlands. It'll be no impact. Won't have any side slopes spilling into any of the wetlands areas. It makes the most sense to put it there.
So looking at what you have on the map, it looks like there might be a culvert or something that runs up in that area.
Is that the dash line there?
Yep.
Yeah, there is a small swell. We did have that looked at. It is not a wetland. There's a small area in here that just drains out, but the wetland scientist looked at it twice, and he determined it was not a wetland.
Okay, yeah. Okay. So your wetland is actually going to stop where that 50-foot buffer line starts, just where the
correct.
End of that dotted line is.
Yep.
Okay, that'll be able to get you into the area that's going to be within the setbacks. Okay, thank you. Thank you.
So before we do any more discussion at the board, let me close out the public hearing too, right?
Oh, okay, sure.
At 6:38, public hearing is closed. Anybody got anything else to discuss?
Nope.
Relatively straightforward. You know.
Yeah.
All right. Anybody?
I'm good.
Motion? Anybody? Anybody a motion?
I'll make a motion to accept it as proposed.
Perfect. I'm going to go backwards this time. Linda.
I'll second.
Oh, you'll
nobody
second.
Nobody seconded. I'll second.
Second. Thank you.
Yes.
Linda, yes. Kevin.
Yes.
Scott.
Yes.
Brian.
Yes.
Tim. Yes. Rudy.
Yes.
Judy.
Yes.
Okay. That one's done. Thank you very much.
Pretty painful, man.
Oh, no, you guys.
Okay. Next, we switch to new business, and we will go just for people who are here for another agenda item. We will go back to old business, but we're going to, that was moved forward for logistic reasons. New business, case number 24-007. Yeah.
Just a quick clarification. When Rudy made a motion, he made a motion to accept it as opposed to approve it. I just wanted to make sure that
yeah.
Yeah.
Approved.
Approved.
Okay.
Yeah.
Approved.
Sorry. Yes. Yep.
Thank you.
Good catch.
Good catch.
Yeah.
We get something. So, case number 24-007, James Logan, London Bridge South Incorporated, 273 Courier Road, Candy, New Hampshire. Owner, London Bridge South, Inc., 273 Courier Road, Candy, New Hampshire. Property property locations, 438 and 476 High Street, Candia, New Hampshire. Lot map 405, lots 28 and 30. Intend to move boundary line, creating a 154.927 acre lot and a 3-acre lot.
The big one?
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Board members, those present in the audience, my name is John LaFave, on the Field Soil and Land Consultants. Here tonight on behalf of the applicant, James Logan. What we're doing is something very simple. We have two parcels. One's approximately 100 acres. One's approximately 50 acres. We're going to move a lot line so that we have a 3-acre lot with the existing house, and we're going to have a remainder tract that's roughly 147 acres or so. I did bring an exhibit to show you how simple this is. So I'll show the board first. So as you can see, everything in orange would be the boundary of the two lots. Presently, the lots are divided by this blue line. Everybody can see this blue line right here. So here's lot one, here's lot two. What we're looking to do is to move that blue line up to here to where this pink line is. So what we'd be proposing is just a 3-acre lot that would leave the rest of this land as one lot. All this land right here. It's pretty straightforward. We meet all the requirements as far as setbacks, frontage, lot sizing. Well, I don't know if you have any particular questions.
The buildings that are you know, on this map, on the what's going to be the 3-acre lot, those are already existing.
Yes, so currently there is existing house and outbuildings on the lot.
Mm-hmm.
Those will all meet the setback requirements. And there is outbuildings on the other lot. Everything we're proposing here tonight will meet the requirements. It's just as simple as creating a 3-acre parcel with the house and leaving a large remainder lot.
Yeah. Anybody got any questions?
Just be able to stay right.
I don't know, anybody got any questions, any concerns, anything?
No, it's pretty simple.
Yeah, as I look at it, I don't think there's much. It's just moving a lot line.
He owns it all.
Right.
Right. I'll make a motion to approve as presented.
I'll second.
All right.
Do we have any public comment? I don't know if
it's for a lot line adjustment. It doesn't require a public hearing.
Yeah. Okay. You know, so... I'm going to...
I thought I want to take that away. I just...
Well, we can make it longer if you want.
No, it's much appreciated. Something very simple. So.
Yep. So we'll start with Brian.
Yes.
Scott.
Yes.
Kevin.
Yes.
Linda.
Yes.
Judy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Rudy.
Yes.
And Tim, I heard you yes the first time.
Pretty close.
And Tim. Yes. So,
I should note that one of the items that we have outstanding, that lot will need state subdivision approval, which normally is a condition of approval. We've applied for it, haven't received it. So, once we receive a copy, we'll be happy to provide that to the town.
Yep.
That's it.
That's it.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Now back to old. Yep.
I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
Why are you doing this? What's your plans for that bigger lot?
So the bigger lot, later down the road, if we do something with it, obviously it'll be through the planning board, and we will have to notify the abutters for that project. Right now, as it stands, there's an existing building and a big piece of land. If he wants to do something with that existing building, sell it, do whatever. I mean, you'd have to subdivide it off, more or less. He's got two lots. So we're just looking to do the lot line adjustment. If something happens down the road as far as a larger development or something that goes before the planning board, you'll get noticed.
Okay.
So we don't have anything like that here tonight.
Yeah.
This, I'm on 516 High Street, lot number 405, whatever. I don't remember.
Somewhere up there, right?
Yeah, but between our property and, which is now Lance Barton's property, there's a 50-foot right-of-way coming up on High Street, going right by our stone wall property,
okay,
up into that back lot that's pretty large. And my concern is, if you're going to make a housing development up there, are you going to put a road in through there?
Right now, we don't have any of those discussions tonight. If we do something, you'll get a copy of the plan. You'll see what we're proposing. We'll answer any of your questions at that time.
Okay. There's nothing imminent right now.
Not at the moment.
Okay.
But down the road, you'll probably something will happen, and you'll get noticed.
Yeah, all we were really chartered with in looking at as a board tonight is just moving that existing lot line. you know, in creating that smaller parcel. So it's more of a procedural thing from our perspective, make sure all the setbacks still work and that type of thing, because that's all we can look at until we have something in front of us.
Something more coming up. Right.
Yeah, you'll receive a notice. So.
Okay.
Yeah. Anybody else? Are you guys all good? Thank you very much.
Thank you for the
answer. Yeah. All right, so next up is case number 24-006, minor subdivision. Applicant Summit View of Hooksett, P.O. Box 299, Candy, New Hampshire. Owner Summit View of Hooksett, P.O. Box 299, Candy, New Hampshire. Property location 113 Crowley Road, Candy, New Hampshire, map 414, lot 2. To subdivide subject parcel, Candia, map 414, lot 2, and Chester, map 11, lot 28, as one lot into three single-family residential lots, each having an area on both sides of the town line. I have one here. Yep. And this got more details with the topo and wetlands and stuff down below.
Okay.
And I think this is the one where I had them put I think this is the version that has the acreage of upland as well, because something does have some wetlands.
Oh, yeah, yeah. On the front of the checklist.
Yep.
Yeah, okay.
So let me kind of summarize where we left this. This was accepted as complete at the last meeting. We had a lot of neighbor residents' input last meeting about road and construction traffic and the road being in rough shape. And we basically continued it to this meeting so that the applicant and the town, Jeff, and the town engineer could discuss options and costs in terms of doing some road improvements from Chester Road to the development to look at mitigation of the construction traffic. I don't know if anybody has any other memories of it other than what I just said.
Nope, that was the crest of it.
And with that, I will let you two guys duke it out.
I'm going to turn it over to Jeff.
I don't know how to do that often. Me and the town engineer obviously talked. I had him kind of write up a letter and sign it so that we have some numbers to go off of. So what we came up with from Chester Road, which is where most of the traffic will come from, to the sites is about 3,500 feet. So we wrote up a quick estimate that is actually itemized in this list if you'd like to take a look at it. So the total for essentially what would be like a grind and repave with a couple other things thrown in from Chester Road to the lot would be $235,374. Now, what we did with that number is we broke that down into a linear foot. So it breaks down to $67.25 per linear foot of road. And then we multiplied that by the amount of frontage on the lot. So the number that is come up with when you, so it's about 552.22 linear feet is the lot, the proposed lot that's going to get subdivided, times $67.25. So the total number was $37,136.66. And that is the number that we would be looking for off-site improvements and things to that nature. And then the other thing, so this number is not far off. So I was not involved when other houses went in on Crowley Road, but Brian was, and he actually said this is pretty close. This is right in line with actually what was done the last time houses were put on Crowley Road. So it's not like it's a new thing that we're doing. It's pretty similar to what we did before. And then he also reinforced the fact that we had talked about last time about trying to recoup our portion of the impact fees from Chester. Somehow I think we do need to try and figure that out.
If this gets approved, that will be what I recommend as a condition of approval, that we get some mutual aid and some remuneration from Chester. Because they from what I can see in the minutes, they said a similar thing that, you know, when they needed to work with us on it. But I also saw that they went into an executive or non-public session right after this. So I'm not sure what they discussed, whether it was this or not. But yeah, we're gonna have to come up with some stuff there with Chester.
I did talk to the town administrator and ask if she would call over there to make some inquiries on that, and I haven't heard back if she got anywhere.
I don't believe she's gotten an email back yet.
No.
I talked to her last week, I think. I know she sent an email.
Right.
I don't believe that they had gotten back to her. I guess she just hadn't heard back.
Well, their board probably hadn't met
in
between, so that's probably what they're waiting for.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, I think we have to put a condition on it. You know, even though it looks like it's already been approved by Chester, that we say it has to be approved by Chester, and Chester has to be approved by Candia, so that we're all synced up. But yeah, well, I agree that we need to get some impact fees back from Chester.
Can I just clarify?
Yeah,
you're suggesting a condition of approval that's just conditioned on Chester approving it, or conditioned on me getting the impact fees back from them as a condition? I don't think I can influence that.
I don't think you can either.
I don't know if you can make that a condition either.
I don't
really.
Can, but
yeah, I just want to make sure I understood. Yeah,
no. I mean, in a perfect world, that'd be nice, but
We have a magic wand.
So his cost for offsite is around $37,000?
Yeah, $37,136.
Okay, and what are you proposing for the rest of it? Is that something that you're going to...
The rest of it would be coming out of budget and things like that, yeah.
Into your proposed budget for next year, or pushing it out further?
It would probably be either coming... It would most likely be coming out of asphalt maintenance, maybe not necessarily next year. But, you know, it's something that's going to get done in the near future, I would say, in the next... Like,
because part of the concern of those neighbors that live in that three-quarter of a mile section there... The road is just getting worse and worse all the time.
Well, I mean, that's true, but I'm not going to put any money into it until the houses are done. It doesn't make sense. I don't want to rebuild a road before the construction, and then I don't think that makes sense.
Well,
I think it's something that happens afterwards.
I mean, it could be milled and blackbacked temporarily until you paved it. That it could do.
Yeah, or, I mean, we could just... Do more patching. I think that would be a lot cheaper of an option than milling and packing. I mean, that all costs money.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, so it's... I think if we're going to put money into the road, I think we should do it after when we can, you know, it's something that's going to stay. I mean, milling and repacking is nice, but it's essentially money that... In reality, you really don't have to spend. I mean, patching is something that is just done anyways. I'm not saying the road's in great shape. I've never said that. But I'm saying, like, I don't know. Sometimes if you want to do it, you might as well put all your money towards it when it's actually getting redone. You're not necessarily just to put a Band-Aid on it. You're going to spend however many thousand and then go back and rebuild it.
Well, I mean, that's basically why we base coat all our developments, and then top coat when it's done. I mean, you do that to stabilize the road while it's under construction.
But those roads are also in a lot better shape, you know.
Well, hopefully.
Than what Crowley Road.
Is that something you're amenable to, that $37,000 off-site improvement?
I'm a little confused about the methodology, because I understand transitioning it to linear foot. But each linear foot of road serves two sides of the road. Mm-hmm. So is that something that everybody pays? Why would one side get tagged for it? And then we're only creating an impact of two new lots, not the entire frontage coming off of it. So it seems like if I'm offsetting an impact with some sort of supporting rational nexus to it, that it would be off of those. So some clarification. I'm not saying I'm not amenable to the number. But can you clarify the thought process on each of that? Because it would seem that both sides share that.
Well, both sides do share it, yeah.
But one side's being tagged for the whole cost.
Well, that's not necessarily true.
We're accustomed
I mean, there's
to
obviously
seeing
two sides of claim. Obviously, both sides have all linear feet. This was mostly...
So is that already in your
math? The footage that we put in here is not both sides of the road. It's just the road, not lane miles. Lane miles, obviously, would be more.
No, so that's what I'm saying is that you're tacking that 60... It was 230 somewhat by 3,500, right?
Yeah.
I just want to make sure before I continue to talk that I'm understanding how you got your number.
Yes.
So what was it?
It was 235,374. And then when you... And that's for 3,500 feet, linear feet. So that's just road. That's not lane. That's not lane feet. It's just
no, I understand
feet.
That, but that you're putting the burden all onto one side of that road.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's not.
But that's how all the impact fees are.
No, most
you
of
know,
the time
break it up
actually
in half.
Based off of traffic. So it's usually that we see that there's X number of vehicles per day traveling that road. And we're going to increase the number of vehicles by this percentage of it, and our cost is to do that. I've never seen it the way that you got there, is all I'm asking.
So I think what you're thinking of is like a normal traffic study, where in this case it's...
I actually think I'm thinking of RSA for it.
So this is based on traffic, but also on construction traffic. So that it's different in that respect.
Elaborate a little bit.
So a lot of what is going into this is, you know, it's the traffic to and from the site, but it's also a lot of the traffic to and from the site during construction. So that is what it would cost us to rebuild that road, okay? And that's where that impact fee essentially came.
So you, at the last meeting, represented that you had traffic info at it. Have you looked at the increase of two additional house slots and backed into it by a traffic methodology?
I have not done a traffic study.
No, it's not a traffic study. You said you had traffic counts for the road.
We do have traffic counts. I don't have them with me.
So did you look at it that way or just by linear feet?
No, so we looked at it by linear feet.
I think, in my opinion, that's the
best way to look at it based on numbers and based on what you have as far as road tonnage.
Yeah.
That's how we computed it.
So, Kevin, you...
My ignorance, right? This is kind of surprising to me. Like, if, for instance, there was two houses being put on Diamond Hill Road, the town road, right, in good condition, are we charging that money to up there?
If in fact, there are areas on that road that need...
But this road.
If there's nothing that needs to be done on that road, off-site improvements don't get charged.
Yeah,
okay,
so this is not necessarily an impact fee. It's
no,
more
it's
an off-site improvement.
Totally different.
It's something that we require for, like, really any development that goes in town.
So if you are going to build a house, you should build it on a good road.
Well, that would save us some money,
yeah.
So the fact that the road's in disrepair before he gets there, he's being penalized for the lack of repair status.
Well,
of the road.
It's figured out
so
that his additional impact to the road.
But no, that's not what we're doing, though. That's where my...
Well,
is.
Yeah, that's the crux of it. That's the bottom line.
But the way we would do that is looking at the traffic using the road and showing how much we're increasing it, not how many feet of frontage one side of the road
has. So you're saying there's a house already in one lot, so you're saying I'm only impacting two lots,
right.
Really.
Right.
So you'd be better with... You'd be better off with two-thirds of that 37,000, right? Right?
Yeah, and I'm not trying to be difficult.
No, I know you're not. No.
At some, I guess there's a resident harping in the back of my head, me, that I think in the very near future, you guys are faced with needing to support a decision for some more limited form of development coming off of Tanglewood or whatever it was called, probably Woods. And so while it's not my primary concern, how would that? They have no frontage, so they don't pay. Like, the traffic has always
been
what...
Build.
Right. Yeah. I'm with
you. Well, that has an entirely different thing because
right.
the traffic study that they provide shows traffic levels that are not compatible with Crowley Road, even as it exists or as even it could be built out because of right-of-ways and so on and so forth concerns. So
I believe their belief, based off of some Chester Planning Board minutes, is a more limited number of lots stays within your arterial geometry or below the threshold limit. So I guess what doesn't seem fair to me is I can see them more aggressively sitting here with you saying that my 15 lots equals this amount of traffic on that road, and when I divide out the math, I think they get taxed less. And that doesn't seem fair. Sure. It's always been traffic.
Okay. I've got kind of a few questions to ask on this. One of them was, Jeff, you talked about the payments that were done for the last development that was over there. Wasn't that like 8 or 9 houses?
I believe it was, let me think. I'm just trying to count them in my head. I believe it was like about 8, yeah.
Okay. And they all paid off-site improvements?
They did pay off-site improvements, because that's...
And what was done with that money?
So when that happened, Dennis did a little bit of work, and then he did pave it with that money that he got from it.
Down in front of those houses?
Yeah. Or all of it.
So, is that road in good shape now? That part of the road?
Not really. I mean, that road, the whole road needs to be rebuilt.
I don't disagree with that, but I'm leaning to something here that I'm trying to figure out. So there was 8 lots done. We don't know how much money was done, how much money was required for those. And I know that you're talking about per foot this time. We don't have any indication of how much money was put for those other 8 lots and how many feet. It seems to me that you're going to add the 2 lots, you're going to add about $19,000 to each one of the lots' cost. And by doing that, I'm agreeing with the applicant over here that paving that section of road is going to benefit both sides of the road. It's also going to benefit people down the road from from this particular one. And that road is falling apart again, so it was really nothing that lasted very long.
Yeah.
And to go to Kevin's comment, we do require impact fees for any house that's basically built in Candia. Whether it's a good road or whether it's a bad road, we've never done something this small. This is a very minor subdivision. We've never, in my time on the board, have never seen anything where we've required impact fees that were specifically going to be put in, or not impact fees, I should say, offsite improvements that were only going to be taking care of a small section of road. Usually what we would do is that when we talked about the whole Crowley Wood development, we said that whole road needs to be upgraded to arterial standards, which is the way that it actually should be done. We have in place in Candia impact fees to put into roads that you can use that money for here if you want, or you can combine it with other ones and use it over this whole year. Because the other thing is that I would take it that you're going to rebuild that road to town standards. So you'd have a small section of road on Crowley Road that was built to town standards, and knowing that leading up to that road, you can't build it to town standards, because we talked about that when it was in Crowley Road. So it almost seems that, to me, that you're penalizing this particular gentleman for putting in 2 new lots for a section of road that's still going to be substandard and always going to be substandard from Chester Road up to where he is. That section is going to be built to town standards, and then you go back to having a road that's substandard again. It just doesn't make sense to me to be trying to pay to have him pay for that one small section of road. That the whole road should go towards what you normally do with a town warrant to do the road and do a road right. But I don't think this is appropriate to be looking for something this small to be charged that much money for off-site improvements.
Well, the concern that we're dealing with on this is that the road is in really bad shape. It is, for all intent and purposes, impossible to bring that road up to town spec without a massive amount of investment in it. And the concern is really not so much, the concern that was voiced last meeting was not so much about the traffic generated from the two additional houses, but from the construction traffic. So what we're looking to do is take some town money, get some kind of off-site improvements from the applicant to help offset some of that cost, to bring things up where it's, I mean, right now I've been on a lot of dirt roads that are smoother and easier to traverse than that road. So I understand the concerns, right? And so I understand your point. I don't disagree with that. I just say I think we're in a unique space here because of that road and the nature of the road.
And my position is not adverse to contributing something. It's having a methodology that ties in and is supportable by something versus you have this much frontage and you chose to build. But the other lot that is across the street, when they tear down their house, they had that same frontage. And it's just I'm accustomed to seeing it traffic. That's all. That's really where I actually believe that there might be some basis for that in state law, which I'm not saying that heavy-handedly. I just don't want to do something wrong either.
Well, we've also
I said, do really good with really black and white answers.
We also set a precedence on Currier Road. The Currier Road was rebuilt from North Road up, and we had 3 houses, I think, that were put in there. That road was in terrible condition, worse than Crowley Road, because you couldn't get up the road in the spring. We didn't do that for them. So it seems to me this is setting something that the board's never done before, to have someone pay for the road when they're just putting in 2 lots. I think there was like 3 or 4 on Currier Road.
Well, that was, I think, our mistake that we did institute an off-site improvement.
Didn't matter whether it was a mistake or not. It was a worse road, and we didn't charge the lot owners.
I don't think we should be doing it going forward.
I don't think we should be doing it in this one. It's just a minor subdivision.
But I do agree with them that charging for the 3 lots it might be excessive, because one does exist.
It just needs to be some logical, supported, statute-based methodology to get here. This happens all the time, so I'm not adverse to something there, but making it up as I go is hard for me.
Yeah, I agree with you. It just, like I said, just does not make sense to have a good section of road in the middle of 2 bad sections.
I don't think you're looking to rebuild the section just
no.
in front of my
no.
comments.
No.
He's looking.
The plan would be to rebuild, eventually from Chester Road to, really post-development. Someday I really want to do the entire road.
Is it within your 5-year plan?
It's not on the CIP.
No.
But that doesn't mean that it can't be done either.
It's not going to happen. I'm just saying it's not.
Don't we have only like 5 years that you can keep that?
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. You've got 5 years to do it and use his money. Otherwise, his money goes back.
Within 5 years.
It's not in your CIP, though.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't have to be in the CIP.
Just because something's not in the CIP.
CIP is a plan, Rudy.
Yep.
It's not stone.
It's a plan, but it's not, We can definitely do extra projects we normally do because things pop up all the time.
And so it's going to cost you $235,000 to rebuild Crowley Road from.
Yeah, but that's not digging up and repacking.
If you're wondering where I could get it. I can get it out of the budget. Now we have access to the highway block grant. There's plenty of there are quite a few avenues that we could use now, especially with the highway block grant. That is a big tool that the highway department can use to knock out some serious road mileage.
So going to what he said about the methodology is that when you did the cost estimates and Brian did the cost estimates, did you base it on full town standards for rebuilding that section?
So right now it wouldn't be to the same.
We can't.
Yeah.
The road cannot be built
to town standards.
In that
it
section,
cannot.
I think it can.
No, it no. can't.
Because
the
in
whole
that
road
section
can't.
Is where the narrowest part of the right-of-way and the narrowest pavement on that road is right there in the swamp. So that part, I mean, you're never going to unless you buy right-of-way from somebody or whatever, which I think I said in the last one. I mean, as an engineer or construction, you know, person like myself and an engineer like Brian Ruoff, yeah, that makes tons of sense. As a town resident, I don't think I would really support that. You know, nobody wants to see that.
So you don't have the methodology to give him on the exact specifications that you would use for rebuilding his section of road and also the section of road coming up to it.
I'm confused with what you're asking.
He's asking, you came up with a number of $235,000, okay, to do the whole section of road from Chester Road up to the end of his lots. He has no information on where you came up with those numbers,
no
what
questions.
The standard
is. Well, I can give you the letter after this.
Yeah, there's Brian Rock did a whole
No, he
study.
Had that.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's to, so what's your concern?
My question is taking that and dividing it out by the frontage,
mm-hmm.
rather than assessing the impact of usage of that road to our project. So if you had, I'm going to pull numbers out of my butt. If there's 100 cars a day that drive down that road, and we put in two new house lots, and those two new house lots add two new cars just to do simple math, that's a 2% increase of traffic. The way that I've always seen off-site improvements done in a case like that is that it's a proportional sharing, and then it's just supported. We can back into it. Anybody can use it the same way. Anybody subdivide something down there. They're not individual backroom deals based off of how it is, and I just feel more comfortable with that. It's not that I'm adverse to having a conversation. It was just a question.
I take your point, too, on the
it's always
playing
been
it,
our
playing
impact,
it, playing
not
it,
our frontage.
But playing it forward where we could be in a year or so from now, that does make some sense. My question is, can we also figure out an assessment for the construction piece and allocate that? And I don't know the answer to that.
Right? I don't think we can. How do you do you do that? Because you'd have to do it on every road, because every road with a heavy truck on it is going to be damaged.
Not necessarily, Rudy.
Sure.
Depends on the road. 27 is not going to be damaged.
Well, it's a state road. I mean, we can't
saying,
do anything with that anyways.
You know, and other roads in town, you know. Like.
So once a road is built to where it's actually got the proper amount of sand below it, proper amount of gravel, and the proper thickness of pavement, like driving trucks on it does not do the type of damage that it does.
I don't disagree with that, but you've got.
That is not.
Yeah, you've got at least 10 roads.
I mean, that's true. I mean, I'm not saying, you know, a heavy truck's a heavy truck, whatever. But once a road's rebuilt, it handles weight 10 times better.
Sure, sure. But you've got a lot of roads that don't. So are we going to charge, $35 a foot or whatever it was? I can't remember the exact number. For every road that hasn't been rebuilt by you yet.
I don't know. That's up to you guys. Honestly.
Tim,
yeah.
Would it be a good idea just to take 2 weeks, and because this is the first we all heard about it, and there's obviously
right, well, we didn't
some issues with the methodology that we want to get it right in the long run.
That's more my concern is getting it right in the long run.
Yeah.
I'm not averse to any of these conversations. I'm not going, wow, that's crazy. It's that we're not getting there. And I'm ignorant a little bit, but not fully, in a way that's supported by case statute for getting to offsite improvements.
Sure.
And
all fairness,
I don't care about that between us. But I think it all rears its head again. And so it might be worth Jeff and I having a conversation. It doesn't screw me up at all to come back in 2 weeks. That's not a bad suggestion at all.
It's a long trip for you.
I know, huh? and honestly, I would prefer to have a conversation with Jeff.
Yeah. And in defense,
get Brian involved in that too, that conversation.
And in defense, right, we didn't get the information from Brian Roth. I think the email came to you, what, yesterday afternoon or something?
No, it came to me this afternoon.
Yeah. There you go. So, all right.
Yeah,
so.
No, I'm with you.
I think
no problem.
I think it's a great idea to do this, Mike, because my concern is over here is like I've been saying right along. I think it's inappropriate to do this.
And I appreciate your point of view. And as a developer, I might be able to, you know, make something different work than a resident that subdivides a single lot for their family. that you don't do it for, and then I start feeling bad because you're doing for one and not the other. It's not an even...
Well, it's not even so feeling bad. It's about the fact that someone could bring us into court, sue us because of not being fair.
Then we'd feel really bad.
That was like saying that you could end up with
I think that it's, I think if you don't mind, I'd feel much better and support this if there was something that was set up that was all-encompassing to make it so that we're not just basically putting you into a bad spot,
yep.
And then making it so that, well, what happens when the next person comes in? Well, you've got to set some kind of precedence and some kind of basically ground rules and the backup data to it, because I found that just being on the board for what I am, if you don't have your backup data, you're screwed. Mm-hmm. If you do, you're going to be fine when you go
and
to court.
I'm with you. If it just follows the rules, that's I can follow a rule. I have a hard time when it gets you in trouble at some point.
Yeah. Now, does he get to not pay the impact fees from Candy if he pays for the off-site road improvements?
Well, the problem is he's not going to pay any impact fees.
He's not going to pay any to us anyway.
He's going to pay him to Chester.
Oh, that's true. All the houses are in Chester.
Right.
Yeah.
That's
kind of the other piece
the
of the
other
puzzle.
Exactly.
The yeah.
There's no impact fees at all being paid to us.
Why don't you just move the road and put
but
it
there is
the house?
There
it's
is
just all awkward.
Yeah. There's one thing, though, that it's road-specific. That's why you have off-site improvements.
Right.
You know, a good road, like Kevin mentioned.
It has to be based off of our impact to it.
Yeah.
Not that we asked for...
Your future impact is going to be a lot less than your impact is right now.
Agreed. But I think it has to be based off of that. Increase
yeah.
the impact. That's.
We wouldn't even be having this conversation if the road was a good road.
No,
right. Exactly.
But doesn't the town have a responsibility? Like, I was just up on Fieldstone Lane the other day, and I used to live on Fieldstone. And I'm telling you, that road, Jeff, I don't know if you've been up there lately.
I have.
That is in rough shape. So that road's been sitting there for 30 years. And has not been repaved. One little section by Baldessari, they patched up. And I thought that paving in general lasts like 13 years or, you know, so if you go like 14, 15 years or even 20. But I just think, and I guess I'm going down off on a tangent, but...
What a shock.
Yeah, you are.
But as a resident, though, wouldn't you love to know, if I lived on Fieldstone Lane, I mean, wouldn't you love, and maybe, I think it is on the five-year plan now, but it's like, and we've been talking about this for a long time. There's so many miles of road, and I know, Jeff, you're trying to get caught up on this stuff. There's so many miles of road. You need to do so much every year, and you should be on a maintenance plan, because this whole idea of patching and going around and fixing stuff, it's just putting good money at the bat. It's like there really needs to be like this plan. But, I mean, that's for another.
Well, but again, we'll close this discussion out and continue it. But the situation here on Crowley is relatively unique. In that roadbed is so bad and so wet, and even with this work that Jeff's going to do after the end of the construction process here, we know that in a few years that's going to be broken up again.
Yeah, unless we
do it right.
Reconstruction.
Right.
So
the 200 plus K
you were talking about, even though it can't be town road because of the
that width, was essentially to put back what was here with just a small
right.
amount of improvements.
Okay, so it's if you were to say town road 24 feet or whatever it is, but because of the conditions that it can only really be 19 and a half, would the road that you built be the same road quality as a...
It would have a lot more gravel. I mean, we would build it as best as we could with the budget that we have.
Right, okay.
You know, what I would love to do for Crowley Road is put it in as a warrant article, but that's not going to happen. It's not on the CIP.
Right.
So that immediately, you know, crosses it off from being a warrant article
right.
project. So it would just need to come from other places.
I don't.
All right. So why don't we continue this to, what's the next meeting, Amy? September?
When did you accept the application? The date?
Last meeting, 2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago. Okay.
All
right.
Jeff, did you, the last meeting, did you say that part of that road, it was like basically built on a swamp and that, to really do it right, that has to really, that section has to.
Through the S-curves where, like, his new house is through a swamp, and on the backside, it's the same thing.
So really has to,
That, that road in, really, in its entirety is very wet, period. But those two, I mean, that road goes, I mean, goes right through a swamp, right over it. You know, in order to really rebuild that road, it needs to be dug out, obviously sand and all that, but that road also needs under drain where it can and in road fabric. I mean, it's going to be, that'll be a more expensive road than a normal road to completely reconstruct. Only because it will take a little bit more, like, infrastructure just to make sure.
But in the long run, it would be better. In the long run, it would last longer if it's done the correct way.
That's, believe me, I know that, you know, some of the roads in town are bad, but you're preaching to the choir, because I completely, like, that's my philosophy. I understand things cost, you know, they cost money, but I'm telling you, if you do it right once, it's done. It's just done.
Okay.
All right, so we're going to... postpone. We're going to
continue
the hearing. Thank you. Until September 4th.
I have a conflict on the 4th. I won't be here on the 7th.
Well, you can send your better half and she can take it for you.
Yeah, so as long as Jeff and I can have a dialogue, that I...
Well, it will...
You can let us know if you can't make that.
I just don't want it to, if I need to involve the board as well.
This is going to show up on our agenda on the 4th, and it'll keep showing up on our agenda until it gets either approved or rejected. So if you can't make it on the 4th, it will then just...
Just let Amy know.
To the 18th.
Good.
Okay?
Thank you. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
All right, thanks,
good
guys.
Questions.
Yeah, that was
yes.
That was an interesting discussion and conundrum. All right, so we don't have anything to discuss on HOP, but Nate is here.
I am here.
Nate.
And Nate kept hearing impact fees and stuff getting spurted about.
I almost resisted
jumping in.
He was smiling.
Good thing you did.
You can turn those around.
His eyes looking up and to the right. So he's accessing his files
right.
Back there. I guess
that's what he does.
I guess the one thing that I would you know just note is whatever the board is talking about with this particular developer isn't an impact fee. It's an off-site
right.
improvement
right.
that you're
yeah.
negotiating for...
We clarify that.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. No confusion then.
Good. Right. Yes. I am here to talk about impact fees. We talked... I gave the road impact fee draft to you all last time. I don't know if anybody had any questions about the road impact fee. I can make any updates that you wish to that. But I do have...
You have the final draft tonight, don't you?
Well, I haven't gotten any comments on the road impact fee, so no. As far as I know, the first draft is still
the
working draft.
Perfect.
So, but I do have the public safety impact fee draft. This is dense, and there's a lot of math, and I want to give you some time to digest it before you take action on it. But I'll hit a couple of highlights. I won't go step by step through the methodology here, because we did that in a presentation a couple of meetings ago. I do want to note, with any impact fee, the purpose of an impact fee is to reflect new development's proportional impact on the system, in this case, the public safety system. And so public safety in this context is police and fire, and in Candia's context, we included ambulance under the fire umbrella. So we're really talking about police and fire, but ambulance is under the fire umbrella. There are a couple of things that I want to note. I was pretty conservative here with some of the assumptions, and I'll walk through what some of those assumptions are. Bottom line, this draft has the total public safety impact fee at $597 for a single-family house. That's $287 of police impact, $311 of fire impact. That is, if there was a bell curve of impact fees, $597 for public safety would be at the low end of the beginning of the where the bell curve goes up. So it's not the lowest in the state, but it's lower than other communities. And again, I was pretty conservative in some of these assumptions, and I'll walk through what my thinking was. The first big item to tackle was the police station, the new police station. And we know the cost of that is $2.5 million in the CIP. The trick here is how much of the new police station is necessary to deal with the fact that the current police station is undersized relative to current needs and modern standards of police station versus how much of that new police station will accommodate future development. It's the piece that accommodates future development that forms part of the basis of the impact fee pool. I won't walk through, you can read the way I did it in here. I looked at the number of sworn officers, full-time officers that the police department currently has. I looked at the number of looked at the total square footage that the safety committee has recommended for a future station. I looked at what that future station could hold in terms of police officers and what that would translate into a necessary amount of square footage per full-time police officer. Once all those numbers were crunched, I think I ended up at 71% of the new police station being necessary to come up to modern standards and meet current needs, and 29% of the future police station being accommodating future development.
Probably reasonable.
I think I ended up at a place where I thought that was pretty reasonable and yielded a reasonable result. And there is logic behind it as you read through this. The fire station was... Yeah, go ahead.
To back up a little bit, I was just briefly looking at the single, duplex, multifamily. In my mind, the duplex and multifamily would be more of an impact
so
than a single.
Unit. That's per unit.
Per unit.
When you look at the duplex, you're looking
this
at $499
per
unit. So that's what? $998
yeah.
for a duplex.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. And so if you had a three-unit multifamily, again, it's per dwelling unit, so 390
okay.
times
right.
however many units are in the apartment building.
All right. I feel better now.
Yeah. The way that it's calculated is based on the average number of people. So we calculate an impact fee per person, and we
right.
translate that into per unit. So that we first calculate the impact fee per person, and then we multiply that by the number of people per dwelling unit for those different types of units. There is a table on page 6.
Yeah, 6, yeah, I see that.
That I did crunch all of the numbers. There are 2.62 people in the average single-family detached home in the town of Candia, 2.19 in duplex, 1.71 in multifamily, and 2.09 in manufactured housing. So that's why... There's a difference between those, but again, it's per unit. So,
right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, that talked about the police station being 71% versus 29% for new development. Pretty straightforward, but a lot of thought went into trying to, you know, identify the most transparent and defensible way of determining what portion of the new police station is for existing needs versus future needs. I did the same exercise for the fire station. Now, the fire station, in the CIP, there is a renovation and addition to the fire station. The addition would bring it from 6,160 square feet today to 7,260 tomorrow. It's the addition of 1,100 square foot bay. And that's a portion of what's in the CIP for the fire station. There's a large portion of what's in the what's in that single project in the CIP that is necessary renovations to the existing space to meet current safety standards, current fire department needs. I did the same sort of analysis as the police department and ended up at a different number in that most of the $850,000 that is programmed in the CIP is necessary to meet current needs in the fire department, to meet the town's current needs and the fire department's current needs to serve the current population. A fraction of the improvements to the fire department would allow for future growth of the fire department and accommodate future development, but it's a smaller percentage than I ended up at the police department. I ended up with the fire department of 91% of the investment in the fire station, with the renovation being attributable to today's needs and the current population, and 9% being attributable to future development.
Well, and that's evident too in the population estimate, right?
Yes.
Your estimate is that population for the fire station is only 4,500.
Correct.
Which we're going to probably blow through, and I think by your estimates there, we were going to hit
2040.
Yeah.
And I think
not so much.
You know, even when Dean put his CIP project together, there were a couple of options for the fire department. The one that ended up in the CIP was more of a let's try to get it to current standards type of project rather than, you know, I think he was being kind of conservative there, and the fire department has the fire station has significant needs in the long term so what's programmed in the CIP is only going to meet a fraction of the future growth needs is really the point there.
Right.
So for that reason, it's a little bit of a different calculus. I did a similar analysis with the existing fire apparatus and the rolling stock. Essentially, there's 9 vehicles, 2 of those being ambulances, the rest being major apparatus, largely major apparatus. And ended up with, I think it was 13% of the town's investment in major apparatus being able to accommodate future growth. Again, those are kind of conservative estimates, but I had some you know, there's a transparent path that led me to those figures, and to some extent, it makes logical sense given what I think we all know about the needs of the fire department in the long term. So a little bit of a different scenario with the police and fire. They end up pretty close to the same number, though.
The rolling stock price difference.
The rolling stock is such a significant investment by the town in public safety that even a small fraction of the rolling stock makes a big difference in terms of an impact fee pool.
Yeah.
Just clarification, page 5. Town of Candia employment. Did it show up with this?
Mm-hmm.
So 2020, 789.
Correct.
What's that number?
789 jobs in the town of Candia.
That's not town jobs. That's
people
businesses.
Who work in the, yeah, in jobs that are housed in the town of Candia.
Oh. Hmm. Seems like a number, but yeah.
So there's 4,013 people in the town of Candia and 789 jobs in the town of Candia, according to the best information
that
we have.
That means a lot of retired people.
Probably, I know that includes people like me who work for a company somewhere but work out of my house. That could be part of it, too.
I mean, overall, it's 83.6% residential and 16.4% non-residential on the jobs to the population to jobs ratio. So it is still a residential community in large part. Some other communities are closer to 50-50, service communities, larger communities.
Let's not forget every truck driver who pulls in and out of that lot is an employee in the,
Yeah.
Okay. That's right, yeah.
And just at the Irving, I mean, they got like 70, 80 employees
right
there. I mean,
all of that.
Right?
All of that.
80,
yeah.
80 something? Yeah.
So, you know, you get a few of those.
Ronnie Severino, he's got 80, uh-huh. That's 100. I mean, yeah. So you can get there you can get there pretty quick.
And then all the independent contractors.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just try to understand. Thanks.
But yeah, those are the trickiest parts of doing the public safety impact fee is identifying what proportion of those future investments in major things like a new police station are necessary to meet current needs versus accommodating the future growth of the town. And it's the new development that is what the impact fees are based on. What is a new development's proportional share of the town's investment in public safety?
Now,
so
one question on that, when you're talking about developments, this would also apply to a single residence being built in, not necessarily developments.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
I just wanted to clarify. It's
at the point of building permit is.
Yeah,
it's right.
Any building
yeah.
permit.
Right. That's what
yeah.
I, yeah, that's what I thought. I just wanted to make sure when you were talking about developments.
Well, I mean, somebody, you know, somebody building a new home is developing, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it wouldn't be anything we would have anything to do with. We'd set them, but then
right.
Bob would be the guy.
It wouldn't.
Like,
it wouldn't necessarily
yeah.
that wouldn't come in front of the planning board, but
right.
it would still be subject to an impact fee for the impact of that house.
Yeah.
So would ADUs fall underneath? There's going to be something with impact
excellent.
Fees.
I excellent question. That on page.
He addressed it on the road one.
Yep.
On page 18, I lay out a framework. For thank you for mentioning that. I would have skipped right over that.
Oh, yeah. Well, I know that's been a current conversation.
So section N starting on page 18 lays out a methodology for how to assess a public safety impact fee for an ADU. It's the same process as the road impact fee. We look at an ADU as an extension of a single family use. Based on the way it's defined in state law, based on the way it's defined by the town of Candia, an ADU is an extension of a single-family residential use. And so we look at the what is the single-family impact fee, $597 in this draft, and then we translate that to a per-square-foot fee for ADUs.
Okay.
So we look, I have the assessing data, I crunch the numbers, the average living area of a single-family home in the town of Candia is 1,932 square feet. We take that $597, we divide it by the average single-family home of 1,932 feet, and we get an average single-family residential impact of 31 cents per square foot. And based on the size of the ADU, whether it's 600 feet or 700, whatever you prescribe, you would assess whatever the square footage of the ADU is, that 31 cents per square foot. That would be the ADU's public safety impact fee. And it's a nice approach because, you know, depending on the size of the ADU, it would have different impacts. So
about $232 for the current ones we have right now, $750.
Yeah. That was clearly explained.
No,
thank
you. So that's, in a general sense, it in a nutshell. I want you to read this and digest it. There's a lot of math here. There's a lot of methodology here. Everything that you were talking about with, you know, clear methodologies with the previous person, I hope you find that in both the road and public safety impact fee drafts that you have.
Yeah, we should get Jeff a copy. I was thinking that when you first sat down, that we should get Jeff a copy, and if you don't have one, I have it, of the road impact.
Jeff has the road.
Yeah, I gave
him
a copy.
There might be some stuff in there you can...
Could you send one to me, too, because I never got one, because I wasn't here for the meeting.
Yeah.
Oh, you weren't here, that's right, Rudy.
I don't have one either, but I'll probably get one.
Yes,
yeah.
I'll just send Amy an electronic
yeah.
copy of both, and then
perfect.
She can
thanks.
Forward it.
Yeah,
I handed
yeah,
out paper copies, so that I've...
Yeah, that's right, when you're talking about
remembering it, yeah.
Did I miss an email?
No, because it was...
Oh,
yeah, it was
you know how many
one
trees
of those
that took that night?
Yes.
Oh, so it wasn't like this, huh?
No.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah, it's the full chart.
Oh, with the spreadsheets and stuff.
It'll be better in a digital form, a little easier in a digital form. So at this point, you've got drafts of both. I want you to read them, digest them, let me know if you have any comments. We had included an illustrative map in the road impact fee. Jeff bent my ear earlier. He said he had a couple of technical items on that. It's not substantive to how the road impact fees are calculated. It's more illustrative for, you know, to show kind of what some of the future plans were in the CIP. So, Jeff, I'll talk to you, and we can update that and make any technical corrections on the map. But at this point, yeah, you have both drafts. There's pretty sound methodology to both. I think very transparent and clear methodology to both. They both are, you know, reasonable amounts. I think very conservative on the public safety. Road impact fee for a single family home, $1,421 on the road impact fee. That is largely driven by the cost of construction of a road in the town of Candia. Jeff had worked with the town engineer, and that was, you know, one of the key figures that underlied that. I would say that $1,421 is pretty in line. Chester's was done 2 years ago. It was $1,100 and change. 2 years have passed of inflation, construction cost inflation. It'd probably be fairly close.
Brings up a point. I mean, I would like to add into the impact fees, cost of living, price index increase,
yeah,
CPI increase on an annual basis, because then you're always playing catch up.
Yeah, you can. You certainly can do that. You just need to, you know, determine, you know, identify a defensible source for doing that. There's construction cost indices. You can use CPI. A defensible source of construction cost is a little different, tracks differently than CPI. In some cases, has had, you know, significant variances from CPI. So,
well, would that probably be the best way to do it? Because, like you're saying,
for the road impact,
you don't want a separate one for road impact. You don't want a separate one for safety at schools, because, you know, the overall CIP is going to say, okay, whatever, all the averages is together. So some of them may be 5% might be too much,
mm-hmm,
for one of them. It might be too a little, but yeah, overall. So it's, unless you want to do it that way. I mean, you know, the board can definitely do it in each one of the impact fees. Say this is going to be updated yearly by the board, vote of the board, based on the construction index for whatever, mm-hmm, for roads.
I get it from an accuracy point using different indices, but I also know that could cause us problems as we roll forward in the future.
Agree.
Oh, we applied the wrong one to the right thing. You know,
I agree.
I think it would be more simplistic if we just use some standard CPI indexing, and it's better than the day we announce it. 6 months later, that number is now too low because prices have already changed. If we do an annual review where they go up by the a particular CPI, whatever we choose, everything goes up by that CPI, and it moves forward, so we're not playing catch up.
On the flip side of that, I do want to make sure you're all, you know, aware and thinking you don't have to adopt these figures. You can adopt anything lower as you see fit. If you wanted to be even more, you know, conservative and you don't have to adopt $597. You can adopt anything lower that you see fit. You don't have to adopt 1421 on the road impact fee. You can adopt lower if you see fit. I mean, I know that, you know, we want to be conscious of you know, the impact on the pocketbooks of the people in the community. So that option is always there as well.
Yeah, you told
to
us
adopt
that
lower.
Yeah. Do you know what he charges right now, Amy? Is it around $1,300,
$1,400? Roughly.
That's what I thought. So you're looking at $2,000, roughly.
Between, if the two combined, $1,900 and something.
And that's not including if we do one for the school.
The school would be added on to that. Thank you.
But I think you've presented something that's defensible. And the problem with cutting down something that's defensible is that it's going to come back and bite the town in the butt. because, you know, if you, you've based all of this on solid data. So you're basically saying, like, you know, this is really, all the data is saying this is what's going to happen in the next number of years, and, you know, things are going to go up. So if you cut yourself off at the knees right at the beginning, you've automatically put yourself behind the eight ball.
Yeah, and you know, that's a decision for you all to make as a board when it comes time to, you know, consider adopting. It's what are you comfortable with? I tried every step of the way to make the most conservative assumptions. There are assumptions that underlie some of these things. And so I've tried to be as conservative as possible in those assumptions.
But considering he prefaced it with, we're way at the skinny end of the bell curve, going down from there might be kind of treacherous for us in the future.
Well, I think the fact that, you know, those impact fees have been in place for a while at, you know, 1300-1400 range, and we're only going to 2000. I don't think that's when you consider the inflation we've had over the last 3 years, that's not really a huge.
Scott mentioned, like, putting the roads on a construction plan. If you think about a house and you say, oh, 25 years for the roof. Have you looked at a roof lately?
Yeah.
Nuts, right? Mm-hmm. So the cost is...
And I think putting it in perspective, too, because I know there'll be townspeople who think opposite of what we're all thinking right now, but putting it in perspective, too, in order to the cost of a building lot, of a three-acre building lot here in Canby is $2.25 to $2.50, mm-hmm. right? So we're adding less than 1% onto just the building lot piece. I don't think that's going to make a developer go, nah. Or somebody who wants to build a house on a 3-acre lot go, I'm not paying it. You know, I just...
And we're very fortunate. A friend of mine from Gloucester is on the planning board there, and he said, a friend asked, if I want to turn this garage that exists into an ADU, what's it going to cost? And he talked about the 50 different licenses and permits you got to get. He said it's going to be about $400K.
Wow.
To make an existing garage into an ADU. It's like...
Yeah.
It's colossal, too. So we're under regulated compared to... Yeah.
So I'm grateful for, yeah. So, you know, I guess my take, and maybe what we should do is... schedule a meeting where we just talk about these, both of these. Maybe next meeting, if we have time, we can put that on the agenda just to talk about these, and then, you know, accept the final draft and then have a public hearing on it. So,
yeah, I think that would be a good approach. Maybe have a little work session with the board where you know kind of have a discussion about, you've got both drafts, you can digest them for a couple weeks, come back. Have a discussion. If there are any tweaks that you want to make, I can come in 2 weeks and take notes of any changes that you wish to make before a final draft, and then we can put together whatever final draft comes out of that discussion, and you can go to hearing.
Are we going to do something this time too with school too, or no?
That's for this year's money. The money's there for this year.
Well, the school will pay for it. I wouldn't imagine town would pay for it.
No, we got it in our budget.
Yeah.
So, as a matter of fact, we've got the contracts for doing the school and solid waste.
Is that for phase two?
I don't think we have a contract yet.
No. You sent the proposals.
I sent a cost estimate for budgeting purposes, but I don't think
we talked about it at last meeting.
Yeah,
and we didn't have it yet.
We put it in the budget for the planning board
for this year. There's an $8,600 number in there for this year.
Yes, for that. Because the money that came out of this is the $8,600 that was from last year, and we encumbered it at the end of the year so that we could get this to be paid from last year's money. The $8,600 that's in there now is for the next step to do with the school and solid waste.
So I can put a contract together for that if the board would like, and we can get started.
It's in
that.
It's in the budget.
Okay.
Right, because I'd like to.
Yeah.
It's in the budget.
Yeah.
Well, you could certainly adopt these and put these into practice as the others are under development.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Susan will be happy.
Yeah. And I'll let Andrea know to expect that bill. So yeah,
I think Kim's got it all set up too, because she knows over with her.
So while you're here, Nate.
Sure. Raymond.
Well, yeah, we can actually talk about that too, but I was just going to, you know, say to the board that you can maybe talk about this, the 10-year transportation plan, and is there anything we want to add to it?
If there is, time is running short.
Right. I don't think there's anything else we need to add to the 10-year transportation plan.
The Four Corners project is in there. That's no change in terms of that's moving forward. They're in engineering phase. Greenman Peterson has been hired as DOT's consultant. They've already had an initial conversation with the select board. They've been out doing surveys. So the beginning stages of the engineering process are in full swing. Town's got Greenman Peterson, the project manager, is Mike Dugas, who is the 30 years at New Hampshire DOT before that, including as the state safety engineer. He's one of the best in the business. So we are in very good shape with having him helping to shepherd the Four Corners project. He's excellent. So
I think he presented when we were trying to figure the maybe the speed limit out, going to Hooksett or something. He came in and then he retired, but so he went into the private sector.
He's in the private sector now after 30 plus years at DOT, and so he's going to be the consultant's lead on the Four Corners project, which is pretty awesome. So.
Right. The next time the select board has him in, can you let us know that we just would make sure we would attend? I'd like to get a better update on what's going on with that.
Yeah. So yeah, I can't think. I mean, I know the other state thing too is the old Deerfield Road bridge, right? I think that's a state.
That is on the state aid bridge program. So it's in the 10-year plan now.
Yeah, but I don't think there's anything else that we want to necessarily add.
There is another red list bridge, but I know there's some discussions
Bean
about
Island, right?
Yeah, exactly. About maybe that wasn't a bridge that needed.
Not really. That's a real low priority.
Right. Exactly.
There's no bridge on Crowley Road, is there?
You don't have to cross that bridge. You know what I mean?
Well, the whole road's like 200 yards long.
Right. I went up there the other day.
Yeah. But you can also access
from either side. You could shut it down and no one would be hugely inconvenienced, right?
Yeah. What about the new Boston Road Bridge that's been sitting there as a pain in the butt for 40 years? Because they screwed it up.
Oh, boy.
As far as I know, it's not on the red list. That doesn't mean you couldn't pursue it.
The new Boston Road Bridge, every time it gets inspected, it passes just fine.
Yeah.
But the problem is that there's no approaches to it. You can't do anything with it. You can't do anything with it because the town never approved the bridge.
No.
Never accepted it.
Never accepted the bridge. So you can't do anything. And it's like one of the worst sections of road in town. Because the aprons apparently separated from it was pulling the abutments apart.
Yeah.
And they cut them off.
The biggest problem that they had was that the road and the approaches to the bridge were sinking for a long time.
Right.
And from talking to some people who, I guess, were around when the bridge was installed, the state's idea was kind of like it just would stop sinking eventually.
Well, there's some cost to that methodology, but you can't tell where it's
the asphalt on top of it.
The original plan for that is that they were using the same geotextiles that they used for the bridge going over the Piscataquis River. Mm-hmm. Apparently, it didn't work in Candy as it did.
It didn't work in Piscataquis either, the whole thing.
Yeah, it did. Yeah,
that is what they did.
Yeah. So it was an idea that failed miserably.
They figured that they wouldn't be able to find the bottom, so they just tried to span it.
Yeah.
That's just crazy.
Close enough.
Someday it's just going to go.
So let's
it
talk.
It sounds like we're good on the 10-year plan.
Perfect. So let's talk about Raymond, because I was going to bring that up, but since you're here, this would be a good time to bring it up. I think I mentioned last time I got a letter from Raymond that they a regionally impactful development in Raymond. I originally thought nothing to worry about because this was phase two and it was only 37 units. It is on off of Green Road, which if you don't know is the extension of Patent Hill,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
It is 1.5 miles from the Candia town line on Green Road. It is 2.5 miles from exit 4.
Okay.
So I called the Raymond town office, got their Amy, and he's like, yeah, and I said, can I get a traffic study? Because all we really care about is traffic. Can I get a traffic study? He said, sure. So he emails me, which I was glad he didn't print it. 307 pages.
Yeah.
Okay. And anyway, so I'm reading the first page, and I see this is a three-phase housing development, multi-use housing development with 249 units total. Okay. 249 units, 1.5 miles from town. So I then flipped through and found the table, which showed that the westbound traffic out of this development toward Candia was going to triple as soon as this was built. And if you know Green Road, there is no way really to get off of Green Road until you get to the Candia line.
Yep.
And if you type in, if you sit there, because I've done this, if you sit there at the end of the road where the development's going to be, and you type in, you know, Siri, give me directions to Hooksett, it's going right down Patent Hill and Depot.
Yep.
Right. Toll booth.
Yeah.
I like that idea. We'll do Blazing Saddles. We'll put the toll booth.
Yep.
Go back and get a shitload of quarters.
Yep. Troll.
So.
Troll with a toll.
So, we obviously have skin in this game. And the public hearing is, I'll get the exact date out to you. It was supposed to be last Thursday, but I got their agenda and it wasn't on there, so I called up and found out it had been moved to the first meeting in September. So there we are. It is, you know, Southern New Hampshire Planning is not necessarily party to this because it's outside of their area. And Raymond is not paying their dues to Rockingham Regional Planning Commission. So
correct.
They will also not be participating.
Rockingham is not going to provide comments on this particular development.
So the cheese stands alone.
Between. Yeah, because Raymond's in the Rockingham region, not the SNHPC region. So it's hit or miss as to whether or not we get notified as the abutting regional planning commission to their DRIs. We have received 3 DRIs from Raymond this year, but we didn't get this one. So technically when we are notified as a development of regional impact, we are granted what's called the status of abutter. We get to provide comments on the project, but we haven't been notified of this particular one. So it's a weird in between. Normally we would try to coordinate with our colleagues at Rockingham, because it's their jurisdiction, to provide comments on this, but Rockingham's not going to provide comments. So we're sort of out in the ether a little bit. But what I told Tim is that, you know, if the board had significant concerns about this development and felt that it would be helpful for Southern New Hampshire to weigh in, to echo Candia's concerns and support your position, if you have a position, that I could talk to Sylvia about doing that, even though we haven't been formally provided a set of plans under the DRI notice. But if that was something that the board wanted us to do, we can do that for you.
What is the DRI stand for?
Development of Regional Impact. I'm sorry, I'm sitting at using...
Yeah, you do that all the time, right?
Yes,
you
do.
Guys,
in actuality, what can Candia do? They can't stop it.
I you have the status of a butter too. So basically you have the, you know, all we would have in
input,
that scenario is the ability to provide non-binding guidance and comments to the board that they could accept or reject as they see fit.
I still think that once traffic tries to go over Green Road and Patton Hill Road, they're going to say exit 4 looks a lot better.
Yeah, but because I would think that, you know, one would think that they've got over 2 miles of road that they are going to have to improve. Because that stretch of Green Road down to the police station
Right.
Ain't real pretty.
No, that's not a very good road either.
Right?
No.
So I would think they're going to have a
that whole stretch massive rain off-site. Green Road is not too pretty.
Yeah, no.
Candy is a little bit better, but not much.
It's one of the few times when you leave Candy and you go, wow, the Candy roads were better.
But I still think once it's all said and done, you're going to see the traffic jump on exit 4.
Stop.
That would be my, if I was driving out of there, I'd say, hell, I ain't going through Candy.
Well, unless you're going to Deerfield or Hooksett or something like that.
Hooksett, like, Deerfield, or
Pembroke.
Yeah.
Nothing there. That's fine.
But they're saying like under 10% of the traffic is going to take a right, so they're being pretty conservative. And while traffic is going to triple, there's not a huge number of cars on Patent Hill Road now. Yeah. But still,
no, but
it's
fast.
Triple.
Yeah, they fly.
It's one of the fastest roads in town.
Right. Yeah.
Patent Hill's our busiest road.
Yeah.
And it all comes from Raymond.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I do not agree whatsoever that they're going to go to exit 4. They're all going to go to exit 3 just like you do.
Stop.
I think, and I was going to bring this up at the end because I had heard about that. I think this is another one where we need to be talking to Raymond about getting some money from him for this.
I intend.
I do not believe for a second that they're going to go to exit 4.
I mean,
they don't do it now.
Yeah.
And people are traveling from farther. Now, yeah, they're going to redo the road. It's still going to be just as curvy as it is now. Mm-hmm. They're not going to change the traffic pattern.
No.
So people are driving from farther in Raymond than this development's going to be, going through Patton Hill, Main Street, all those other roads to Exit 3. Plus, there's nothing at Exit 4. They're building a gas station now, yeah, but
they've been building that for years.
Everybody comes to Exit 3 because they want to do Dunkin's, which is fine. I think that's good. But I'm telling you, people are good. I bet you most of that traffic will go through Patton Hill.
The money would come from the developer, not the town of Raymond.
What's that?
The money would have to come from.
Well, whoever, I don't care who it comes from. I'm just saying. Like,
Jeff, that was.
So how do we?
I don't care. That's up to you guys where it comes from.
How do we calculate that
saying.
Fee?
Yep.
Well, we don't know yet. Well,
would that be an impact fee?
It would be a road impact fee.
No, it wouldn't. No,
it would not be off-site.
Off-site.
Off-site. Yeah.
Yeah, that would have to be a conversation between.
Between
the two, the now, two towns.
So we can hire a full-time police officer to do radar on Patton Hill.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Yeah, but we don't get any of that
now,
money.
Right? Right.
Yeah. But so, you know, I bring it up here because I'm planning on attending that meeting. And my thought is that, and I don't know what this is going to be like because this could be an absolute zoo down there. But if given the opportunity to speak,
yeah.
You know, I know what I want to say, right, and to cite the traffic study and say that the traffic on our roads would you know, triple. And therefore, you know, Candia is not in favor of this development. And if this development does become reality, if you do approve it, we expect financial remuneration for our roads. And I don't care which one of you writes the check, but one of you is writing us a check.
Yeah, because it's going to have to be built on arterial road standards.
Yeah.
Because you're going to get to that level of cars.
We can say that, but I don't know. Do we have any actual leverage to make it go?
Not really.
Not really.
Public roads. Right?
Toll booth.
Yeah,
I like that idea. Can we put a toll in, right?
The toll, state troll with a toll.
Either that or we just discontinue Green Road. In Candia.
Yeah.
That would be tricky.
Hey, it just takes a vote of the town.
It takes a town vote.
Oh,
yeah.
Boy, oh, boy.
You get everybody on Green Road and Patton Hill Road to decide.
Make it a Class 6. Close it off.
And Depot Road.
Yeah.
Subject to gates and bars.
Main Street,
well,
all
there,
of them.
There is that PSNH right away, right across it, right? Just a bridge there.
Well, that's not where the town line is, unfortunately.
Yeah, it goes further.
Screw up with the excavator sometime, dig the road right up.
Hey, I'd be all right.
So that's kind of my plan, is to show up at that meeting, hear what's going on.
Sounds like a plan.
And basically state that sentiment that we are opposed to it as the butters. And that
without duly compensation.
That's right. We expect.
Well, you just can't say you don't like it. You have to have some kind
of
solvent.
Well, because of the tripling of the traffic on our roads.
Yeah.
without deleterious impact.
Right.
We already have an issue on Main Street entering into 43 as it is. If you add another
and I'm not gonna
100 cars a day.
I'm not going to hear what Brian said earlier, but I'm going to state that when I stand at where this development is supposed to be and I type in Google Maps directions to Hooksett, directions to Pembroke, directions to Deerfield, guess which way it sends me?
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, are we going to make our case as strong as possible?
Well, they could do an exit, the exit 3.5, or the Depot Road.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
It 1985 was when dairy started.
Brawley Road.
Yeah.
Right off, for exit yeah, 4A. Right off Brawley Road.
Yeah. 39 years.
They would solve a lot of problems.
Yeah.
Well, this is right. I mean, this development is like right after you go over 101 for the last time before you get to the police station. It's right there, so they could put a highway exit right there. You know, make a new one.
Yeah, no, I did look at it. It's huge. It's huge.
Yeah, it's mixed single family and townhouse.
Well, Tim, I'd say the same thing I told you before, which is if you go to the hearing and, you know, you walk away from the hearing and you think there's some way Southern New Hampshire can help, just give us a ring. We'll be there for you.
Yep. Sounds good.
Thank you.
And we'll see how that goes.
Good.
I did, and we don't necessarily need to talk about it because we've been going an hour and a half here, but I did, based on everybody's feedback from the last time, make edits to the ADU. Let me grab another couple
have
of
travel minutes. Safe, Nate. Thank you.
Thank you.
Very
much.
Thanks. Have a good
Thanks.
Night.
Good night,
Nate. I'll come back in 2 weeks for that discussion
yeah, thank
the
you.
Road impact fees and any notes of any changes.
Okay. Yeah, just
thank you.
Thank
see you then.
Okay. See you, Nate.
All right.
And hopefully, I don't need to call you for Raymond. Hopefully, this thing just.
Oh, no worries.
Sounds good. Single copies, buddy, or is it two copies?
No, it's just one page.
How many acres? Do you know the number of acres?
It's a parcel? Couple hundred.
Yeah, I didn't. Yeah, it's quite a bit. They got a big lot of land. Yeah. Everybody got one, so. But yeah, you know, I mean, I don't care if they build 250 houses in Raymond, but I care that it's going to triple our traffic.
You're right. Absolutely.
You know, and then. You know, let's get real too. It's going to affect Depot, and you're going to get out to the end of Patton Hill, and it's going to affect
Main Street big time.
And those are already kind of dangerous intersections at either end of Main.
Well, when you come from Chester Road to Main, there that hill right there. I mean, I was going to ask Jeff. I mean, I wonder how often there are accidents there. Jeff, do you know? Are there? You know, Chester Road and Main Street. You know how that?
Yep.
You got that? Are there ever accidents? Is it really unsafe?
There
is
are
it
accidents.
There are. I would think. I mean, because if people come, you don't have much reaction time.
No.
You know, to get out.
I mean, if you're pulling out and taking a right, you know, coming back towards the Lincoln Light, you know, there's a lot of times where there's nobody there when you pull out, and then you look in your mirror, and there's somebody right on
right there.
Oh yeah.
Bumper. I mean,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. No. No doubt.
That's a pretty.
It's a really short sight line.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I remember years ago, Rich Radwanski with DOT in the Hooksett shed there. I remember going out there and somebody with the select board, and we met, and like we were trying to get it addressed, but the state didn't want to do anything.
Yeah, we've talked about it with them before. I mean, it's two state roads, so, but me and Chief McGillan, I've actually talked to them a couple times, and I don't believe they're very interested in doing anything with it, mostly because, I mean, it would take a lot of money to take that hill down for people to actually see. I think a more realistic thing would be maybe just, it would have to be something with motion to where something would light up in front of the people turning out of Chester Road, saying like oncoming traffic or something.
Yeah.
But then I cannot remember what it was about that idea that the state did. Like, I think they said it didn't really work. I think they've tried it before or something. And it would also be very expensive to put in because I think they have to be linked. I don't think they're through radio. I think it's actually like a hardwire or something like that.
Stop sign.
But it's something that we've brought up before. Well, see, here, I think that wouldn't be a bad idea. The only thing is, you know, you'd always you would definitely have people blow that stop sign all the time.
Oh, sure.
Because if they're not paying it, I mean, it's just like anywhere else. But if they're not paying attention coming over the...
Well, you'd have to put a sign at the top of the hill, too, stop ahead.
Well, yeah.
But I can see somebody stopped at the stop sign and somebody plowing into the back of them, too. So, yeah. You know.
But if they put one of those, you know, you see more and more of these... They have these radar, they monitor people's speed because, you know, they don't have enough cops, you know, but it really does help. Like, I notice it does make me slow down when I see repeatedly, and I'm like, oh, yeah, it reminds me. That would be a good place to have one to let them know that those people to slow down coming over there.
Yeah.
Anyway.
It's funny, I was at Pattonville the other day, and somebody coming off the green blew that stop sign. Like, there's a bush, like, growing kind of in front of it, and... blew right through it, and it's like,
yep.
Wow.
Yeah, as a motorcyclist, never assume they're going to stop at the stop sign.
Exactly.
Just,
I always look at the wheels, tires, see if they start to move.
So,
doing my horse trailer, the horse went, someone went right through that.
So anyway, I made the few changes that we talked about the last time, right? There should be a maximum of 1,000 square feet per ADU. Mm-hmm. But that the ADU shall not exceed 75% of the square footage of the main house.
I'm wondering what kind of conversations we need to have about that 1,000 feet and whether, like I have reiterated, like what's the town want an ADU to be, right? The town should really have input into that. But we're going to be presenting this as a warrant article, right? To change the existing...
That's what it would have to be, as a warrant article.
Right.
So the town would get its say, yeah. And I'm not married to the 1,000 number. That may be, you know, that may be a little large. I think 750 is a little small.
Well, like I said last time, if it's really supposed to be an in-law apartment kind of thing for a couple people...
Yeah.
But
you would hold the square footage to a minimum to make it be uncomfortably small for more than that, right?
Yeah, but the situation that we're trying to address is based on today, which is not so much an in-laws living there, because none of us want to live with our in-laws, as it is with, you know, parents with, you know, a son and a daughter-in-law and a kid or two.
But effectively, though, as we discussed... If they could put a foundation in, they're putting in a 2,000 square foot home on the existing lot that has a home on it. So our current regulations say you can't have two homes on one lot, right? But we're changing that by way of this, saying that yes, you can. So if that's what we want to do, that's great. But I think it bears more conversation than that.
How close is this to what the state was looking at doing in the legislature last year?
It is similar. We are addressing things in more detail. I can't remember what they had in there for square footage limits on the ADUs. I think they just said it had to be secondary to the house. I can go back and look, but I can't remember whether it had a square footage or not.
I think they did, but I can't remember.
But they did some stranger verbiage around it, but basically I tried to model this. I tried to take the black is our existing, the red is changes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And so I tried to take what we currently have and incorporate in a lot of what the state was looking to do.
Why don't we just take what we know is the problem and just... eliminate that. I think the problem is right now is that it has to be attached. And the biggest problems that have been coming up with people is that they wanted to do like a detached one over a garage or something like that. Because I personally agree that 750 I think is a better number, because when you get to 1,000 feet, you know, my condo up in Lincoln is 1,000 feet and it's got, you know, enough room for, well, it's got two bedrooms and whatever. So you're getting to, I think so you're crossing that. You're crossing that line. The ADU is supposed to be an accessory dwelling unit, and then you're getting to the point where, okay, this is like, what did that?
he was just saying that the average size house is
1920 at a time.
Yeah, so, yeah, so basically what you're doing is you're allowing, by right, another doubling of the house size, which seems to go against what really the intention of the ADU was. And then I think the only other thing in here that I would suggest that came up in the legislature was the fact that instead of saying conditional use, it's just allowed by right for the first one. And then the second one would have to go to the ZBA or something.
Right.
Which makes it so that right now I think it's it kind of goes against the whole thing of trying to get these things in here with as little red tape as possible, because I've never seen the ZBA say no. They just have to go and get a special exemption, and the ZBA can't say no, because that's the way it's written in our ordinances, unless they want to go over the 750 square feet. Then, of course, it's, you know. And that's worked out well, because they've never denied that. The people that came in that had the handicapped person, that flew through. So I think it's just probably make it just so that it's simple and takes care of the two big roadblocks that we have right now.
Yeah, you know, I mean, we could do the first one by right. The thought was originally to make this two, to make it rather than a special exception, just make it a conditional use.
Mm-hmm. Which easier just to say, like, fine, go ahead. Because I think it used to be, I don't remember anything in Candy like this, but a lot of people used to have guest houses on their property. And it's you know, you can consider it a residential unit. So theoretically, you can't have a guest house in Candia because of the way that it's structured. But mm-hmm. I think by changing it to this, then yes, you can do that. And, you know, give you an example of, not that it's set up that way, but like with Boyd Charver's property where he's got the house that's out by
the pond.
The pond. Yeah. I mean, that's not very near the house. And I don't think it's on the same property anyways, but I think it's another set of property. But again, it's like, okay, let's do that ADU guest house type of thing and keep it under 750 square feet.
Well, so detached used to be allowed in Candia. When did that change?
I'd say about 20 years ago.
Okay.
And I know that Dick Snow was the one that spearheaded that it was allowed, and then warrant article was put in to make it so that it had to be attached.
To try to keep it from
being a separate dwelling,
exploding into a second home on your property, right?
Probably. I don't remember the motivation behind it or anything, but I just remember what it
did. The thing is, I'm torn. Like, I think if you own a property, you should be able to do what you want with it. But I know the intent of ADUs historically has not been that.
Right.
Right?
Not for rentals.
So it depends on what our job is our job to make it easy for people to do what they want to do with their land, which I really, kind of libertarian-wise, think people should be able to do what they want with their land. Or do we want to kind of hold what the town has always said they want to do and kind of keep things small?
It's right? The balance between the two of them.
Right.
Yeah. And I think there's a happy compromise between the two of them. And if you get rid of the fact that it has to be go to the ZBA to ask their permission to do something that they're going to tell you, yes, you can do anyways, that eliminates a piece of red tape that shouldn't be there. The other part with the detached, I agree with you that if you want to put it, you know, in 600 feet down behind your house in a nice little area that's in the woods, fine.
So I think the biggest problem is, like, which you should probably take out there.
Right, and I think the other thing is that the state was looking at is that they were looking at saying three. The first one, you don't need to get anything.
It was two.
But then,
two.
Was it two?
Two.
Yeah.
Two.
Okay.
Yeah.
Two.
Without,
two.
Then if you wanted to go more than that, which is one more, then you can require to have some kind of thing, which then kind of makes it so that you don't have an explosion of like a three-acre lot with 20 ADUs on it. ADUs. Unless we do something like tiny houses.
Tiny houses.
Yeah.
Which we can't do. We're not doing right now either. Yeah. And so, like, you know, again, a lot of this is just feedback from the last discussion we had. I just wrote my notes down, and so I edited them, right? This is a working document by far.
It's much better to see it in writing. It's really good.
Yeah.
You did that shot.
And so, yeah, it was determined last time that, you know, we wanted to, you know, that did we want to keep it within distance of the dwelling, and you know, I think majority of people said yes, we do, but that's whatever. And, you know, also that's this adding the same entrance from the street and sharing the primary driveway was another thing. Because, again, it's an accessory dwelling unit.
Yes,
right?
It's you not, are allowed to have two driveways, so.
Yeah, but.
Well, we're already allowed to have
two driveways. But we do.
But just say, but do we're already allowed to have two.
Okay, well, if they've got one, you know, I don't. We don't. What you guys were saying the last time was we don't want, you know, they got, you know, 1,000 feet of frontage, and they've got one down the road and around the corner, and then now it is a second house. It's not an accessory dwelling unit, right?
Yeah.
That's what we're trying to address there. Again, I'm kind of trying to be the note taker here on this.
I think what you're having here is very good. I think that's fine.
Yeah. So you know, 20, it's like 28 by 36. You know, think of a cape. You know, 20. That's 1,008 square feet. So for me, I'm just trying to visualize and trying to think. Okay, so you got two people, so that's 1,000 square feet. So I was just at the last meeting. I was saying, like, for myself, I'm like, gee, I like to have a little bit of room to move. You know, well, so I'm like, I want the 1,000 feet.
The people.
But now I think where Kevin's coming from, he's saying, well, the, you know, the what people may end up doing is what you're, you know.
Right.
I was just thinking more of like what I was.
750 though, you can't make it, you know, accessible for handicap. That's why those people came in.
That's what the 900.
Yeah, that's where the hardship comes in.
Right.
Yeah, that's fine. I also
so that's why I said, you know, 1,000 feet kind of covers it. You know,
the state building fire codes for two-family dwellings.
I think 1,000.
Yeah, I guess that would. Never mind,
that's in black, and it's not me.
No. I was talking about just to attach
814 square feet. That's small rent.
Because it's
the other one. Yeah, the other one's going to be if it's detached, it's going to have
24 by 34
in the building.
Because it's not going to be two families. Going to be single.
But that's tiny.
That's tiny.
Right. But what that's covering is the fact that if you put an ADU, now you've got a two-family and it's attached.
Right.
You've got a two-family.
Right. Property. Yeah, because that's in the law.
Yeah. And one of the things, Rudy, that we talked about too, and just, you know, the current ordinance says on-site parking for one additional vehicle.
Oh, yeah.
That's one I kind of didn't like.
I don't like that either.
Because what if they've already got six parking spaces?
Mm-hmm.
And they need to add a seventh because they put an ADU?
Well, yeah,
you could.
Yeah, you can modify that to make it so that it's if there's sufficient parking spaces,
yeah.
Have to do it.
Just
put in there. Just put
they
in
want
sufficient
to park on the grass.
Sufficient parking for the number of units because we already say in
stay
the
long.
In our zoning ordinance,
not as long as it's not in the road.
The requirements of parking in a single family residence.
That's what I was putting here over the required number of spaces. Mm-hmm. So. They need to add one parking space over the required number of spaces for a single family house.
Yeah, you just have to make it so that it doesn't say that you have to add one. If you
right.
Good like Brian said, if you have a six-car garage.
Doesn't make sense to add a parking space.
No. Yeah. No, that's fine. That sounds good. I like that.
Okay. So, I mean, does everybody think we've kind of gotten to where if we go back to 750 feet?
No, I'm not going with 750.
800?
I disagree. Nope.
You're going to be like an auctioneer. I hear 850?
I like 1,000.
I'd rather.
I think it's 1,000. Yeah, well, I would go like 8, maybe 850. Thousands is what we lived with our three kids.
Perfect. Right?
See, well, I just
we're tight.
Then you're tight.
I just looked up the first house I ever bought in Salem, New Hampshire. It was a tiny ranch, and it was a little over 1,000 square feet. It was
mine was 816.
Yes,
that's
three
tiny.
But it's not accessory. It was a house.
What's the purpose of that? Was to raise a family in.
Yeah.
The purpose of this
build it where I didn't have to take a mortgage.
Right, but
this is supposed to be an accessory, not a single.
You're right. Those ranches. Yeah. I was in Manchester just yesterday at over by Memorial High School, and I went some of those side streets. And I was crossing over to South Willow, and I'm looking at some of these ranches. And I'm like, holy cow, and you're right. People used to have three kids.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at that ranch.
In the 800.
And I remember going into those houses, and it seemed like, you know, but
you know what?
Tiny.
Yeah, it's small for raising a family.
Right, for a family.
It's huge for two
for one or two people to live in.
All right, I'll compromise. Yeah. 850.
850. I'm okay with that. My husband grew up in less than 1,000. Seven kids in one bathroom.
One bathroom.
Yeah, no, it's true.
I mean, no. And they survived.
I'll tell you that my personal my personal thought on the square footage, I think 750 is small. That's small. I mean, but
one person could live in it, like I said, the elderly.
An elderly couple could live in it. But the fact is, you want to make it uncomfortably small so you can't have a mom and her three kids living
in it. My camp trailer is like 450 square feet. And I got to be honest, man, after a few days in that, I am like, give me a room, lots of room, with the starry nights above, get me out of here.
But the purpose of it, is the purpose of it?
Yes. Well,
if the town says we want the purpose to be to help the state's housing problem and have everybody have another family on their lot, if that's what the town wants, great. But I don't think that's what the town wants.
The bottom line was this all came up from mother-in-law apartments.
Right.
You only have one mother-in-law.
Well, maybe.
Usually.
Yeah. But nowadays that's changed.
If
again,
they have two, they probably don't get along.
Right.
But nowadays that's changed because younger people nowadays with the mortgage rates and the cost of housing,
they're staying with their parents.
They're staying with their parents, right. And they're getting married, and they're having a kid, maybe two little ones running around in diapers.
And then the parents are saying, get the hell out of here.
Exactly.
Right. When are you going to get out of here?
That's changed from in-law to
the question children. Is, what's the objective of an ADU? If the objective is to house a family of five, then we need more square feet. If the objective is to house a couple,
a single, they get on their feet and move out,
Newlyweds that maybe have an infant, right?
Yeah.
But they got to get out because it's getting small, right?
Single
if that's the purpose,
right?
Yeah, a single parent with a kid. I think it's also reverse now too. You can't forget that. Mom and dad are building the ADU, and they're moving into the room over the garage, and the kids are living in the house.
Yep, because they can't afford a house. So we get a sweetheart deal, we can be close, that kind of thing. Age in place.
Darn baby boomers, they're the ones causing all the
And see, I still think so. I'm just going to throw 850 in there as a number. We can talk about it more because I agree with you, Kim. I don't want this to be a second house on the property.
I don't want the town to turn to the planning board and say, what are you doing, right? Because aren't you listening to what we want?
This is sort of temporary housing for, a temporary amount of time.
Now, we also have to remember in our zoning ordinances that the minimum square footage for a house is 600. Square.
800
square feet. Yeah, 800.
Well, that's why we've got to put in here, and that's why I've added this verbiage, right? That because it according to be an ADU, it must be smaller than the primary residence.
Right. Right.
So we'll keep with the whatever we do. We'll keep. If we go over the 750, we'll add in the shall not exceed 75% of the square footage of the house. Right? Because you don't want somebody who's got a 600-square-foot house coming in with a 850-foot ADU because they haven't done an accessory dwelling unit. They've done a new house.
First house.
Yes.
Except that wasn't there.
Right?
For the average 2,000-square-foot house, that's a 1,500-square-foot ADU.
Right, but what I'm saying is if we go 800 or 850 or whatever the number is,
maximum.
As a maximum.
Yeah.
But we say you can't build it that's more than 75% of the total square footage of the house.
Of
the primary.
Yeah.
Right? Understand the logic? That's keeping it an accessory dwelling unit.
Yeah.
That was...
Or you should put in there, whichever is
the least.
Yeah.
Whichever is the smallest.
Yeah, I mean, I can reword it that way.
It's like right now, the way it is, it's like... Okay, well, I'm going to do it 75% of my house.
Yeah, but it says a maximum. I'm going to say a maximum of we'll pick 850 square feet, but it shall not exceed 75% of the square footage of the primary dwelling.
Yeah.
Says the same thing, and we can work on the wordsmithing when it goes out to vote. But that way there we're keeping it. All right, so I think we're getting close.
I'll make a motion that we go to the approval of minutes. How's that?
Okay.
Perfect. I didn't expect that. Every time I bring this damn ADU thing up, I don't expect it to last very long. Yes,
dear. I have a recommendation first set, because Linda made some suggestions that the second set needs some fleshing out at the end.
Fleshing out.
Okay, so we're not doing August 7th.
If that's agreeable.
It's agreeable with me. Let me give him a piece of candy.
Now, where the heck did... Where did the 17th go?
It should be in there, unless you can go with me.
It should be in there.
Did you go for a yellow?
I did take it with me, but I thought I brought it back. I did not.
It's in your folder. Mine is.
No, but you weren't here last meeting.
Oh.
Now, I remember, hold on, I think, was this?
There it is.
The 17th, I was sick, so I'll have to.
July 17th.
I,
There you go.
Oh, thank
you. You.
I think I actually read this stuff. I think I was okay with everything. I didn't have any issues. Anybody else?
No, I thought it was fine.
Are you talking about which one now?
17.
17.
Oh, July. I don't even have that. Yeah, here. Yeah, we're
going to
go over it. Yes, please.
Yeah, no, I read it all. I didn't have anything. I don't know if anybody else does.
No, Tim, I just had one question in here. I was like, there. Did we ever get the date for the final report for
Hopkins?
Hopkins?
Yeah, I have not. It's been submitted, but I don't have the final copy, and I'm going to get that from.
I'll just look up first. Okay.
And we've got we do have a hop to kick off.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
That was then, there was one thing on the 7th. If Linda gave you something on the 7th, there was one thing in here.
We're not going to discuss
the 7th.
Yeah, but all right, I'll give it to her afterwards. I'll find it. All right, so get a motion for the minutes of the meeting of July 17th.
Make that motion.
To accept. Rudy makes the motion. Who's going to second? All right, we'll get down the list. Judy.
Abstain?
You were not here, yeah. Rudy.
Yes.
Tim, yes. Brian.
Yes. Yeah.
Scott?
Yes.
Kevin?
Abstain.
Abstain? And you abstain
yes.
too, right?
No, I was here.
You were here? Yes, you.
I was sitting in for two.
Yep.
Okay, so we are, we're good. And I think that's all we have to do. So
I'll make a motion to adjourn.
Second?
Second.
Linda? And all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, keep quiet.